Folks, Women's History Month, one of my favorite months for the No Pixel Dark podcast. I always try to get really great guests to come on the show, and I'm so excited for the next person you'll hear. This woman is kicking down doors, taking names. She had a huge op-ed in the Baltimore Sun recently that blew off the door, and I was so proud of her. She's also a former contributor of the show, way back in infancy in the baby years, and she's helped get No Pixel Dark off the ground. Also a very good confidant consultant for the show, and has helped the show grow and opinions and options and things going in that nature. So the next voice you hear will be Miss Amber West.
We made a pledge to do what's best for the health of our communities, and we continue to deliver on it every day for every one of our members. With access to a network of over 1 million providers, rewards for living healthy, and more care options than ever, we are CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield, and we are changing healthcare for all that we serve. At CareFirst, it's not just our name, it's our promise.
Welcome to the No Pics of a Dark podcast. I am your host, Aaron Dante. I told you, it's Women's History Month. We do it big. We make sure we have the heavy hitters, women who are taking the charge and taking no names and doing it and doing the work. So, we have a friend of the show, finally a guest of the show. It's Amber Wetland. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We're going to give you your flowers real quick because we got to do it. I got to read it off here. Amber Wetland is associate principal at Ayers St. Gross and leads the firm's practice in community and campus edge design. Trained as both as architect and a planner, she works on projects that bridge across disciplines and scopes of feasibility studies for the Smithsonian Institute and campus's master plans for Purdue University to neighborhood visions plans to East Baltimore. Was that good?
Yeah, I love that.
And you're in. Can we say South Carolina place where you've been to?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You've been down in Charleston.
Yeah, I've been down in Charleston. Doing some work. In North Carolina.
I mean,
up in Boston.
When I see you,
Baltimore.
You're everywhere. Thanks for hanging out on the show tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Great, great. Everything, how's life treating you?
Oh, it's good. It's good. You know, got through the holidays and charging into the new year. So things have been really busy.
And thank you for being a guest for Women's History Month.
I'm excited.
We've been trying to make this happen. We make it happen.
Yeah, yeah. So female power.
Yes, you have to. And it's actually the highest listening month for the podcast.
Ooh, that's great. Is that year after year?
Year after year.
Love
the
it.
Highest listening. People tune in and they really want to take interest in what women are doing the job in the community.
Hell yeah.
And throughout the world. So, and again, you were a contributor. You're giving us, you know, just giving us knowledge and whatnot. So I gave a little background. So tell us a little bit more. We gave you the other word. But tell us, like, are you from Maryland area? Did you grow up here? Tell us a little about it.
Yeah, I'll give you a little background. So I'm both a licensed architect and planner. And so I'll rewind and we'll get back to what I do for a living. But I was born in Kansas. My entire family is, you know, I'm farmers and long legacy of being in the Midwest. All my extended family's out there. But my parents moved out to Maryland when I was young. So I grew up in Columbia, Maryland. So planned Newtown by Rouse. And I have to say that growing up in Columbia in one of the original villages really shaped my interest in designing communities, designing where people live and work and play, and how you do that in ways that are equitable, that are integrated, that are very diverse and provide, you know, opportunities for lots of people of different walks of life. My dad is a landscape architect, and so I am an architect. So, you know, apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. I grew up going to work with him, take your daughter to work day, and could see all the designs that they draw, and just got really excited. I thought for a long time I wanted to be an engineer, but I discovered the world of architecture, which has more of an artistic lean to it, and just I knew when I went to college at Maryland that's exactly what I wanted to do. And then my mother's a social worker, and so she does a lot of therapy practice, but at its core, she's really interested in social issues, in how community and how people's environments impact them. And so when I was going to do my two masters, I actually mastered in architecture and planning because I was really interested in how how people create community, how neighborhoods are designed and developed, and how they manifest. So that's how I ended up as an architect and planner.
And I remember I sat in one of your classes that you did at University of Maryland, and you were talking about urban development and things of that nature. So it was very informative, kind of like, you know how you have friends, you're like, I really don't know what they do, but they have a job. You really don't talk too much about it. You're like, what do you do again? So it's always fascinating. Thank you for letting me come in your world and understand a little bit what you have going on. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. It was great to have you there.
So you talked about you growing up in a community like in Columbia. Do you think that shaped you to be under learn more about urban development and how they you were so curious about how Columbia was built? Mm-hmm. Did that transfer to college and things of that nature? Is that how it? I know your dad. You said your dad was a landscape architect, but did those combine? Like, did that all combine? Please let us know.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think the best way to describe my interests and my profession, like what I do for a living, is really I like solving and tackling big, complex, like messy issues, big, complex problems. And so I did my undergraduate in architecture, and that's great, lots of design, but I actually lived in France for a summer. I lived in Paris, and it's really where I fell in love with cities. I mean, who wouldn't? And I got really interested in urban form. And so when I did the dual masters, it was really this merger of design and architecture and the physical built environment, buildings, and mixed with socioeconomic issues, mixed with transportation issues, mixed with all of these big scale planning issues. And so most of what I do day to day, the easiest way I describe it to people, if I'm, you know, talking to someone on an elevator for 5 seconds, is I design cities. Mm. I design cities, neighborhoods, college campuses, and things in that realm that are adjacent to that. And oftentimes it starts at the really big scale. So you mentioned Charleston. I'm working on a plan for the entire peninsula of Charleston. Mm. It's a peninsula plan. The last time they did one was in 1999. So it's a really big endeavor. Charleston has significant sea level rise issues, so, and significant equity issues, a lot of displacement of their historic Black communities. So big, complex issues that we're trying to solve, and also address how the physical environment, how the city itself, the built city, either supports, you know, positive change and positive growth and equitable growth, or how policies maybe don't contribute to that. So there's a really long legacy in America of things like urban renewal, where policies were created that have displaced residents. There's redlining, there's all kinds of things. And we know this living in Baltimore. But I think what a lot of people don't always connect is that there are physical environment impacts and how you design that can help promote equity, that can help promote diversity. And so that's really at the core of, I think, my personal and professional interests is how you design neighborhoods in more integrated ways.
Did you, like, so after you went to Paris, you saw all that, you came back to the States, and I was like, how can we make this for here?
Yeah.
How do you even find a job? Like what companies, like, you know, how does one look for an urban plant designer, developer, architect? How do you go about looking for things of that nature?
Oh gosh, it's such a good question. Especially because I am adjunct faculty at University of Maryland. Okay. So I'm a professor. Yeah, I teach. And it's really great to kind of look at the next generation and watch them transition into the professional world. In planning, there's lots of routes you can take. You could go into private practice, which is where I currently am right now at Ayres St. Gross. I work for a design firm or an architecture firm. And so it's actually the perfect merger of both my planning and architecture backgrounds. But there's also lots of planners and professionals that go into the public sector. So Colin Tarbert at the BDC is actually a Maryland alum, Maryland okay. Architecture alum. There's also other colleagues who, you know, went to planning programs, who are in development, who are in real estate, who are in transportation planning, who are at state level, city level, who are in private practice, who are in consulting. So there's lots of different routes you can take. I think it's really just what are your passions and interests. And for me, it was really the confluence of design and planning.
So you didn't want to do the public sector route at all? You didn't really want to go with the state route or any city route?
At least not yet.
Not yet. I get it. And so how many years have you been with the company you're with right now?
Oh, I've been there over a decade.
Wow, that's longevity.
Yeah, it is a long time.
And people don't do that anymore.
I know. I don't know what's wrong with me. No, just kidding.
I mean, it must be a great company to work for. Therefore, you're still there.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, where are you guys located?
So Ayres & Gross, we're in Locust Point. We've actually been in Baltimore for over 100 years. Mm-hmm. So founded in 1912. And we also have offices in D.C. and Arizona. And we have people kind of scattered throughout the U.S. So we have a lot of remote experts, if you will, who help plug into different projects. But we're born and bred in Baltimore and have grown pretty intensely over time. And it's a really wonderful place to work. And we really do. Our focus is on creating great places that that are helpful to everyone. And so it could be on a college campus. It could be for a city. It could really be anywhere, but just designing great place.
I mean, if you guys are everywhere, people must know who you are. So that's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great
thing. Our marketing does a great job.
But there it is. That's what it's all about. The bids and all that good stuff. Yeah. So now you guys are over by Under Armour, correct?
We are. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're on the Tide Point campus, at least for now.
Okay. Okay, at least for now, because yeah. I know, yeah, we know Under Armour's moving
exactly,
to the Baltimore Peninsula and whatnot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's really cool. So you've been there. So it's weird because I remember my friends at architect school. I never saw them in college, and it was a 5-year program, and it was like 5 years, and they had to go over to Italy, and they had to do a year over there or something like that, where they had to go and learn architecture in Italy and stuff like that. And it's mind blowing from what they've told me, but I never saw them. And so was that something like that you want to do abroad? Like when you went abroad, like did you really want to, could you do it grad school? Could you have done it like in grad school and go abroad? Did you do that? Or
I actually did. Yeah.
Okay,
I lived in Russia as well.
Did not know that. Okay, here we go.
It's a fun fact. I know I've known you for how many years?
Yeah, and, not, you never
know, I
have
known all that. These little
I didn't even know you were from Kansas until now. I'm like, Dorothy, come home. Okay. But Russia, okay. That's a mind. It's exclusive, mm-hmm. folks. What were you doing in Russia?
What was I doing in Russia?
Yeah, what were you doing in
especially
Russia?
Especially these days, because this was over a decade ago.
Okay, yeah. Well,
relations were different.
A little bit different.
No, we had a summer program that we went over there. We partnered with the School of Architecture in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
And it was an integrated group from Maryland, planners, real estate people, architects, preservationists, and we kind of cross-collaborated. I want to say there was maybe 15 of us, but partnered with an architecture school over there and spent a summer doing a urban design study for an area of St. Petersburg. And I won't get into Russian cities. They're really fascinating. They have kind of an inverse development pattern of American and European cities. Mm-hmm. The highest density is actually in the suburbs.
Okay.
And so whereas, you know, in certainly European cities and many American cities, your densest places are in the city center, and then it, you know, peters out from there. Russian cities are almost inverted. So it was really fascinating. So it was a good learning experience. It is the one place I've traveled to that I have no desire to go back to. So.
I've heard that from many people.
Yeah.
I've heard that from many people. Yeah. I hear like when you land, they need to know where you are and where you're going and where you're heading to.
Yeah, there's a lot of surveillance. Mm-hmm.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
that's what I
heard. It's a little cold. This street culture is a little cold.
I've heard that. That's what a lot of people tell me. It's different. It's a little you enjoy your freedoms, put it that way.
Yes, yeah. And it was a great learning experience. And everyone that we worked with, the students were amazing. I still keep in touch with some of them. We message back and forth a few times a year, and they're really wonderful. But it's definitely a different place.
So when we get back, folks, we're going to talk a little bit about what you have going on now. We'll talk about the Baltimore op-ed that you came out with. We'll talk about women in the business of architect design. See, you know, what's going on, who's breaking those glass ceilings and breaking those barriers down, and how you've succeeded in navigating that field also. So we'll be right back at these messages, folks.
Give to United Way. Your gift could be the first spark of something bigger. It can help someone find, interview for, and get hired for a job, and provide follow-up services for success. It can break down educational barriers and give that extra help to a struggling student with in-school support programs. Give today. Spark something bigger.
Are you or someone you love in need of mental health support? For All Seasons is now offering same-day therapy appointments with no wait list. Through the For All Seasons Open Access Program, you can walk in for mental health services and begin therapy in the same visit. For All Seasons accepts all insurances and provides financial assistance if you need it. For therapy, psychiatry, or victim support, we have appointments available today. Call For All Seasons, 410-822-1018.
And folks, we are back with Amber Ryland. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, we learned something. Now I learned, and the audience learned something new. You're from Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And you're also went to Russia. Yeah. Two extremes, but that's all right, though. That's all right. But that's pretty cool. That's what this show is all about. Learning about people who are doing great things and from the community and what things they're bringing, offering. And you're offering a lot of stuff. So we have so many things we could touch on right now. Which one do you want to start in? Because we can go off the hot topic of the open ed or Baltimore, East and West at Baltimore development. What do you, you tell me, it's your show.
Oh man, let's dive into East and West Baltimore.
Okay, let's talk about it. Let's talk about that. Cause I know that was one of the topics that we want to talk about in this investment. Tell us a little about that and like what your thoughts are and what you've seen since you do urban development.
Yeah. So I've been so fortunate just in my time at Air St. Gross, as well as just my career and personal interest, to have been involved in two pretty incredible projects, one in East Baltimore and one in West Baltimore. In East Baltimore in 2016, one of the partners at my firm, Adam Gross, and I were connected with Reverend Dr. Bishop Hickman, Dante Hickman, mm-hmm. in East Baltimore. He's the pastor of the Southern Baptist Church in Broadway East. And we were connected with him because he penned a really powerful op-ed in the Baltimore Sun called The Adventures of Missing the Point, I believe it was called. And it was right after Freddie Gray. And he talked about the legacy of disinvestment and what communities in East and West Baltimore need. And he grew up in West Baltimore, mm-hmm. so he's seen both sides. And it caught the attention of Ron Daniels, the president of Hopkins, who put Adam and I in touch with Dante. And we met with him and realized that he has these incredible visions and ideas about how to restore the community. And so so we ventured on this master planning effort, this community-based planning effort, to help capture community members and residents' desire for the future. What is their vision? What do they want to see as their neighborhood as they look into the future? Because right now, that neighborhood in East Baltimore is over 50% vacant. You know, there's really high crime rates. There's tons of disinvestment. There's trash that's scattered across the ground. There's boarded up houses. There's crumbling infrastructure. And there's people that live there. There's amazing people that live there. And so we spent about 2.5 years working hand in hand with the community, with members of the church, to capture their hopes and dreams for the neighborhood and put that into a vision. It's called the East Baltimore Revitalization Plan. Mm. And it was adopted by the city planning department as a neighborhood plan, I want to say in 2018. And the whole incredible kind of point of doing it is really to create a lot of consensus around this shared hope for the future, and then also give, you know, the church and other stakeholders the tools to be able to take a project or take an idea from that, because there's lots of ideas in it, and move it forward. And so Pastor Hickman has been fundraising. He has he's a pastor, almost turned developer. It's so impressive to see what he has done. You know, I know that Governor Moore is a member of his congregation, and so he just has some incredible support that has come out of the woodwork as part of this planning effort. So he continues to move things forward, and it's really exciting and awesome to see. And so it's hard work, though. You know, it's really challenging to get funding for some of the projects that we've talked about. One of them is a health and wellness center, because there's a complete dearth of access to healthcare in that neighborhood, and childcare and gyms and frankly almost everything. And so so you know, he's been pushing that project forward, but it's really challenging to get funding. And so and a lot of that stems from the systemic disinvestment that we've seen in East and West Baltimore. And so there's challenges still persist.
What have you learned about yourself doing this project?
Ooh, that is a great question.
Because it's always the professional side, But what have you learned about yourself doing this project?
I see that why you're so good at this podcast.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This is such a good question.
I'm just learning every day.
I don't think anyone has ever asked me this question. And I talk about this project a lot. So I learned that, one, I thrive on consensus building. I really enjoy working with people, and I actually enjoy people who don't initially agree or have, you know, very conflicting ideas. I like them being in the room. I almost like the people who are grumpy and who are pushing back, because I want to go talk to them and understand why. They almost always have a reason, or can get to a reason as to why they feel that way. Mm-hmm. But usually it stems from some disconnect between maybe how I view something and how they view something. And so if we can sit down and have a conversation, a lot of times we can make some progress towards consensus. Mm. And so being able to work with people, just regular residents and citizens, these aren't architects, these aren't planners, but work with them and communicate some of the kind of complex forces that are happening, right? Like economics in their neighborhood and transportation, mm-hmm. and, you know, things that are in policy and things that are impacting their daily lives. Being able to kind of teach and show how that is impacting their neighborhoods is really important, and then work towards, well, what are some solutions to make this better? What do you need? How can I capture what you need into a vision for the future? And it's like the consensus building around that is really exciting for me. So I think that was probably one of the biggest lessons that I learned myself.
Well, I look at everything, and I'm always, the first thing I look at is, where is a grocery store?
Yeah.
And why is there a food desert? Mm-hmm. Why are there not? Why do I have to go to a CVS to get cereal? Mm-hmm. It's going to cost 10 times more than it costs at a Giant. You know, I look at right now, and I can go on a tangent on it, and I know why. You can go to a certain part of the city right now, and there's three grocery stores across you from each other. And I'm like, wow, but I guess because it's a more populated, got a little more fluent money. But then you literally, Southeast Baltimore, but if you go a little bit north, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. You have three gyms over there. Mm-hmm. And you go north, there's no, so all this health and wellness, and you see the disparities, and you understand why people don't believe in the system. Mm-hmm. You see why people give up. You see why people don't vote. You understand things. You listen to the street. You say, oh, this is why.
Yeah.
So what you're doing, we thank you for what you're doing, because you don't have to do it. You don't really have to. You know, it's one of those things where it's like you don't have to do it, but really appreciate the effort. And you know what? You got to keep making noise and putting stuff out there so people understand and donate. Maybe help out, you know, maybe volunteer.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. And I do, your grocery store point is so important, because access to food is critical. And we know there's major food deserts in the city. Mm-hmm. And there's multiple factors that influence, you know, why that exists. I think, you know, one obvious one is just discrimination, mm-hmm. right? And where they're located, and where you know, people perceive there to be wealth, and where access is plentiful. And that's not right, but that is in part a reason for where or why there are some food deserts. You know, another piece is there's a old real estate adage that retail follows rooftops. Mm. And so you always need population. Grocery stores are looking for certain population, just quantity, but mm-hmm. metrics. You know, they look at median household income, so they understand what the purchasing power is. But they look at those metrics to figure out where are the best places to go, where we're going to make the most profit.
Right.
And then the other piece that's really interesting, I actually was interviewed on this topic a couple of years ago. But so I think you probably know this, but Maryland, the state of Maryland, has really weird like liquor sale laws.
Right, right.
You can't sell alcohol in grocery stores.
Won't come here.
Yeah, and it's one of, no one quote me on this, but I believe it's one of five states that doesn't allow beer sales, and I think one of seven that doesn't allow wine sales in grocery stores.
Something like that.
So
yeah.
complete minority. But the challenge is that it makes it harder for grocery stores, you know, these national chains, to pencil some of their metrics, right? You know, they make a lot of money off of alcohol sales in Pennsylvania. And so coming to Maryland is harder, and coming to Baltimore is even harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a really small example of something that's a policy that we have at the state level that is making it harder for Baltimore to attract grocery stores. And it's something that you wouldn't necessarily think of off the top of your head, but it's one of those small things that that creates yet another
hole. Drop some jewels and gems right now. Look at you. Look at you. So let's talk about being a woman in a male-dominated industry.
Ooh, my favorite.
How have you been able? Because Women's History Month, we got to talk about that. How do you navigate this? Like, because it's like, you know, if you don't see, like, I always view it like myself. When I go into a company, I look around and I look. Is there anybody look like me?
Yeah.
Is there anybody look like me who's doing a great things? Is there somebody in the company? Could they be on my mentor in my company? And a lot of companies don't have like that looks like me. So how do you do that? How did you navigate to where you are right now?
Oh, man. Where do I begin? Well, I'll start with just a little bit of context with Air St. Gross, okay, because we do have a female president. And that is rare in the architecture industry.
Wow.
And really impressive. Luann Green, she's amazing. And she's an architect by background, but most of her career experience is in planning, in campus planning.
Okay.
And so I actually, when I interviewed over a decade ago, it was with her.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. And we just kind of clicked in terms of our personal interests in thinking at the big scale. So when you talk about mentors, when you talk about seeing people who look like you, who are like you in some of those leadership roles, it's so important.
It
representation is so important. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the years have passed without any sort of gender discrimination issues, you know.
I've
a building that went up in Boston, and almost everyone on the team was a male, and I was one of very few. Most calls, I was the only female on the call. But what's really great, and one thing that I lean into a lot, is building really strong relationships. And it doesn't matter, male, female, whatever. It does not matter. And I think it's so important because when you start to build those relationships, You can have really frank conversations with people when you have that social rapport, when you have that capital. And so my team that I worked with on the building that went up in Watertown, just outside of Boston, they are some of my very dear friends to this day. And I could at any point send them something if, you know, if a contractor or a builder in the field said something to me that was discriminatory towards my gender, I could easily talk to my colleagues about it because we had a great dynamic and they would support me 10 times over. And that I think is really important. So just really establishing those relationships. And I think as you continue to grow and become a leader in your field, you have more opportunities to call some of those things out. But it really does, a lot of it really does depend on building that rapport and those relationships so that you can have a frank conversation and do it in a way that feels genuine and supportive.
I like hearing that. I like that. So you've navigated for how many years? So you've been for about 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And what would you say to the young woman that's coming up that wants to be in this field, watches the episode right now, it's like, I want to do what she's doing. What was some advice you would give her?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of advice, but I would say, you know, one of the things, there's an amazing woman who recently started. She's actually at Maryland right now doing her dual master's in architecture and planning.
Oh,
so
wow.
She's doing the same track I did, and she's one of my mentees. Really amazing. Ashley Warren is her name, and she's a Morgan alum. But it's really great to be able to kind of work with her. She's so impressive and has amazing communication skills. And so we talk a lot about the importance of building relationships, mm-hmm. and also just building your toolkit and being open to opportunities. And man, talk about an amazing woman who is just like, she's like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll jump in on that. I'll try this.
Mm.
And being open to that, especially in our field, because you're going to have so many different projects and you're going to have so many different challenges and there's big complex issues. So the more open you are to learning those things, I think the more well-rounded you're going to be later on. And I think for, you know, being a woman, I think that really helps you to have a broad toolkit And you can certainly specialize and dive into something you're really passionate about. You know, clearly I'm really passionate about community design and neighborhoods and cities. But that doesn't mean that I should not think about anything else. And so I really kind of support at least that initial learning and openness that it really gives you a broad toolkit to be able to levy as you continue in your career.
Nice, nice, nice. So I love that. You're open.
Yeah,
let's talk about that. Ball and Sun, talking about the new Inner Harbor design.
Oh, yeah.
I read it. I loved it.
Thank you.
I didn't know certain things until I read that. Yeah. I liked how you talked about the community involvement of design and having different people from areas, so putting more community involved.
Yeah.
And getting more people designs from all across the world so they can all put in some input in there.
Yeah.
And I thought that was spot on because this is, you only get one time to make this right. Tell us a little bit your thoughts behind writing this. Why'd you do it? And what did you want people to walk away with?
Great questions. So I know, I think a lot of people are talking about Harbor Place. It's really been the hot topic for the past few months. And, you know, Harbor Place was such a renaissance for Baltimore when it was initially built. And so this is really, like a once in a generation opportunity to rethink the Inner Harbor. I know that, you know, listeners and you and myself and others, everyone in the city has seen a lot of commentary related to feedback on design and different ideas. And I think all the conversations have been really great and fruitful. I was sort of struck by the process that the city took with Harbor Place. And so, so they awarded it to the MCB team, I'm optimistic that everything will continue to evolve in a good, equitable, productive way. But I wanted to kind of take a step back because there's so many other cities that have prominent pieces of real estate. I mean, the Inner Harbor is our city's epicenter. It is the civic heart of our city. It is the most important piece of our city.
I'll break it down for people layman terms. It's Boardwalk and Park Avenue.
For
Monopoly. That's what it is.
Fun fact, I do not play Monopoly because I'm too competitive.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
but yes, that is a great analogy. Right at Pratt & Light. So I was reflecting, you know, working in lots of other cities, working in Charleston and working up in the Boston area. Like I was reflecting on the approaches that many other cities, both in the U.S. but also internationally, have taken to these prominent pieces of real estate in their cities. Mm. And so many other cities would take a design first approach. And so instead of, immediately kind of awarding it to a developer who's going to, you know, they're going to do exactly what MCB did, right? Like they're looking at the pro forma, they're looking at the economics, which are very, very important. They're also thinking about design and engagement, but, you know, they got to make sure that their numbers pencil in order for this to happen. I was reflecting on, and I kind of wanted to push the readers in the city to think a little bit more broadly. And, you know, we had an incredible opportunity when Harbor Place was in receivership for the city to say, okay, like we're going to issue an international design competition, an open international design competition for Baltimore's most prominent piece of real estate.
Right.
And as part of this, we're going to require a pro forma. So we're going to require that there be an economic piece to the submission. You want to make sure it works.
Right.
But we want to see the biggest, boldest, most, you know, wild ideas from across the world.
Right.
And you could have an open solicitation for this. And, I think I mentioned the High Line, you received hundreds of submissions.
City, yeah, which is amazing.
Hundreds. And city residents would have the opportunity to look through and say, oh, like these are interesting. Maybe vote on them, provide input. And that list could be narrowed into the top five preferred designs. And those design teams then go, they do another round of iteration, come back. And we as a city vote on what we would like to see Harbor Place to be. And then at that point, what you do is you issue that to RFP, to request for proposals. And you would get a developer like MCB to come in and say, yeah, that's great. Like, we're going to execute. We're going to build that. Like that, we're going to build this idea. And there's going to be refinements and there's things along the way. But it was interesting to me that we took a kind of development first approach as opposed to design first approach. And I wanted to sort of just share that perspective as an opportunity to learn from.
Loved it. Loved Thank it. You. What is your hope for Baltimore's going forward?
My hope for Baltimore, so I am a planner, I'm a big thinker, mm-hmm. I enjoy complex problems, and Baltimore is not short of complex problems.
No.
But I think that we are a city that is so reactive. And to be fair, we have a lot of challenges. We have a lot of issues.
Right.
And so in some cases, we do have to be reactive. But I would love to see the city be more proactive. And for me, that means developing a vision. That means developing plans for the future. So having a physical framework for how the city should grow and develop. Having priorities for where we want to invest. So we're not just spreading resources like peanut butter and no progress is actually being made. It's that I would love to see more of in the city. I know there's some, I know city planning is working on their comprehensive plan update. So like there's some things floating around, but that vision, that big, bold vision of like, we could be amazing and it could look like this. That's what I want to see, because those are the things that I think really sink in with people that we can really get behind and move forward with.
I like it. So I'm going to do a quick speed round with you real quick.
Oh, boy.
So you did say you were, how long were you in Boston for? About a couple years going back and forth with the project?
Yeah, going back and forth, yeah.
All right. So we'll start with that. Dunkin' Donuts. Starbucks.
Oh, Dunkin'.
Because that's Boston thing. Yeah, that's what they do up there. You know.
Yeah.
Crab
Starbucks is too expensive.
They're a little expensive.
That's crazy.
They're a little expensive. Crabs or crab cakes?
Crab cakes.
Okay. Where do you normally get them from? Or do you make your own?
I make them. Broiled.
You broil. Okay, no fried. Broil healthy, no, right?
Yeah.
All right. I know you used to be a track person.
Oh, yeah.
See, I knew a little bit, did a little homework. Who was your favorite person in track growing up?
Oh, man, Marion Jones.
Oh, wow. Okay. I like FloJo. She had the fingernails.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, she's like badass. Yeah. All right. So see me, look, I'm throwing favorite equestrian event.
Ooh.
See?
To watch and to do. Okay. Oh, man. You know, I horsework rode for 25 years.
That's why I said that. See how I'm going right to it. I'm going right to you here.
I actually really love watching dressage. So okay. The fact that Snoop Dogg's now going to be commentating on the 2024 Olympics is exciting.
Right.
You get to watch the horses like crip walk. So
I love it. Yeah. I'm excited to see that. Where, if you were to go horseback riding anywhere in the United States, where would you go?
Ooh. I would probably do some really long, like multiple day trek through like the Rockies.
Okay.
I think it'd be really awesome.
I did a 1 day trip with Ogden, Utah.
Ooh, yeah.
In the mountains.
Love that.
And it was scary. Going down a hill and you're like, hey, but it was definitely an experience and a half. So that was definitely. So what season do you like better, winter or summer?
Winter.
Ooh.
I was born during a blizzard. So I think.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, so I'm you just, like, okay.
It's
are
in
you,
my blood.
All right. Are you a skier?
No.
Oh, okay. No. You don't mess with that.
I mean, I have.
But I don't mess with you. I snowboarded once and I was never doing it again.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk for like 3 days afterwards.
Yeah. The last time I skied was actually exactly a year ago. And I did it in Whistler and I hadn't skied in probably 8 years.
Canada.
And that was a bad idea.
Yeah. And if we hop in your car right now and popped into music, what would be first thing playing in your car?
Oh God, it's probably Ludacris.
Ludacris, move out the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you for your time. This is what you want to do. Tell people where they can find you. Maybe somebody is inspired to hear what you're talking about today. I don't know if you have a website, your own. I don't know.
I don't know what you got going on.
So let people know.
I do have a website. It probably needs to be updated, but I do have one. LinkedIn's a great way to find me. I do stay relatively active on that, or at least check it. Or through Air St. Gross, like I'm, you know, Google me. I'm on the website. But yeah, I always welcome good conversation. And, you know, people who are interested in any of the things that we talked about today, I'm always happy to talk and share more. So
I love it. I love it. And I want to give her kudos and props, because I totally should have said this earlier in the episode. For those who didn't listen to the way back one, Amber made a list for African-American restaurants in Baltimore during COVID and during George Floyd. And so all you had to do was go on the site, and it told you anywhere in what community to go to support Black or African-American or people of color restaurants. So thank you for doing that when you really didn't need to.
Oh, thank you.
And so we really appreciate that. And I just wanted to give that shout out again, because people may have forgotten.
Thank you.
But I have not forgotten.
I appreciate it.
All right, folks. Thank you so much. Happy Women's History Month. Love, peace, we're out.